in this hour. Amen.
Amen.
Well, if you were hoping for a sermon on eco-theology, I'm sorry that I shall disappoint. Though it's a brilliant idea. Ansley, just give me a tip in the future. Now, some among you who have keen memories, keener at any rate than mine, might remember that quite recently I preached a sermon on giving thanks. Now, the thing is that the sermon as a genre seems to be eminently forgettable. No one remembers a sermon a week out, not even the preacher. So I know I could have recycled that sermon, and most of you would be none the wiser. But I'll resist that temptation and revisit the theme of Thanksgiving for a second time and endeavor to say something new. After my last sermon on this topic, the Most Reverend Andrew Hutchinson said to me, "Your sermon reminded me of that great medieval mystic's saying, if the only prayer you ever say in your life is thank you, it would have been enough." As it happens, that prayer is in your bulletin today. The mystic in question, Johannes Eckhart, is better known as Meister Eckhart, and he happens to be among my favorites. Thanks to Archbishop Hutchinson, I've been thinking about that profound saying ever since. I have been full of questions. Why? Why does Eckhart think that thank you is a prayer? And why would that be the only prayer we need ever say in the whole of a human life? Why might thank you alone suffice? Now, I'm struggling my way to answer those questions, but I hope the questions will stay with you longer than my answers, as my answers will in any case soon be forgotten. I have but one answer to this question. Thanksgiving is the appropriate response of the creature to the Creator. To know myself as a creature is to know that I am not my own creator. I did not bring myself into being. I do not keep myself in being. My life is not my own. At each and every moment, my life is given to me, and that means that my very existence is a gift. Here we face another searching question. It's a very simple thing to say, my very existence is a gift. But what does that really mean? It's an easy phrase to toss off. It's almost a preacherly platitude. So how then shall we move deeper beyond platitudes? We can divine an answer to that question by pondering someone who explicitly refuses to receive existence as a gift. Perhaps some of you came across this curious story in the BBC that came out of New Delhi in February of this year. I know it caught my attention. It's the tale of a 27-year-old businessman, Raphael Samuel, who decided to sue his parents. Why, you may ask? For being born. The story reads in part as follows. A 27-year-old Indian man plans to sue his parents for giving birth to him without his consent. Mr. Samuel, of course, understands that our consent can't be sought before we are born, but insists that it was not our decision to be born. Well, he certainly has that right. So far as I'm aware, none of us received a vote in the matter. To quote the philosopher Martin Heidegger, we are thrown into existence with all of its particularities of place and time, not a single one of which we get to choose. We do not choose our parents. We do not choose the place and time of our birth, and above all, we have no choice about the sheer fact of birth itself. The BBC story continues. A year ago, the young man created a Facebook page which features messages like, isn't forcing a child into this world and forcing it to have a career kidnapping and slavery? The young man also asks in his Facebook posts, why should I suffer? Why must I be stuck in traffic? I ask that one a lot. Why must I work? Why must I face wars? Why must I feel pain and depression? Why should I do anything when I don't want to? Many questions, one answer. Someone had you for their pleasure. Now, there's something funny and even endearing in this story. If you read further, you realize that his parents truly adore him. They're both lawyers and they're looking forward to the case. And yet, despite the humor of it all, there is a poignant sense of loss throughout. The BBC reporter concludes his story by asking the young Mr. Samuel if he is unhappy about being born. And Mr. Samuel responds, I wish I was not born. But it's not that I'm unhappy in my life. My life is good, but I'd rather not be here. You know, it's like there's a nice room, but I don't want to be in that room, he explains. Striking, isn't it, that the young Mr. Samuel says he's not unhappy. He even names his particular life as good. He is simply unable and unwilling to say yes to life. You know, it's like a nice room, but I don't want to be in that room. Now, Mr. Samuel's questions can prompt us to ask ourselves many questions. How is it with us? Are we happy to be in this room? What might it mean to say yes? How might we learn to say yes to being in this room called life? What if the young Mr. Samuel isn't alone in being at odds with himself? Surely all of us have days, and perhaps even have had years, in which we felt a certain ambivalence about the fact of being alive. And dear friends, at least in this moment, I'm not talking about those among us who, for various difficult reasons, have battled with painful suicidal ideations. So far as we can tell, Mr. Samuel is not suicidal. He just cannot find a way of saying yes to life. The answer that our tradition offers to this aspect of the human predicament is the doctrine of creation. Like all theological words, it's a doozy of a term, one that is routinely misunderstood and abused. At its worst, we make creation into a once-upon-a-time story of how God created the world in 7 days, a story then that we then deploy to do battle with the biological sciences and cosmology. But that is not what the doctrine of creation is about. Creation is a way of saying that you and I are not random bits of isolated consciousness arbitrarily tossed into life. We are not the unwanted and accidental children of an indifferent universe. On the contrary, creation is the affirmation that we are the beautiful, beloved, and cherished creatures of a loving God. That, dear friends, is the true meaning of the doctrine of creation. Jews, Muslims, and Christians share this conviction that we are creatures brought and kept into being by a loving God. To say the word creation is to affirm that life is a gift. Each of us is a gift to ourselves and others. The doctrine of creation grants a feeling tone to the whole of life, the tone of gratitude. Psalm 100 puts this beautifully. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come into his presence with singing. Know that the Lord is God. It is he that has made us, and we are his. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his courts with praise. Enter his gates with thanksgiving. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. For the Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever. The psalmist issues an invitation to joy, gladness, singing, and praise, all of which are part of giving thanks to a loving God whose creatures we are. The psalmist invites us into a joyful discipline of saying yes to life again and again and again. Captured as we all too often are by the pressing cares of life, with its countless tasks, burdens, and obligations, it's easy to fall into low-grade inattentiveness and even outright resentment for all that life presses upon us. But the psalmist teaches us that we need not fall captive to blasé moods of indifference and unconcern. We can instead opt for the tender work of praying just one single prayer perpetually. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But thank you for the whole of life? Are we to be thankful for the fact of grievous wounds and losses that are also part of the very fabric of our experience? How can we sustain gratitude in the face of pain and hurt? Just these questions came up this past August in an astonishingly tender conversation on grief that took place between Anderson Cooper and our greatest living comedian theologian, Stephen Colbert. I'm working on it. The conversation between the two of them was marked by an unusual measure of kindness, vulnerability, and heart-opening candor that I've never before or since seen in the media. Mr. Cooper had just suffered the loss of his mother. As a result, their conversation turned to the theme of loss. Cooper invited Colbert to speak about his childhood loss, the defining experience of the young Stephen's life, namely the tragic death of his two brothers, Peter and Paul, and his father in a plane crash. By a curious coincidence, Mr. Cooper's dad also died when he was 10. To Cooper's questions about grief and faith, Colbert, America's most famous Catholic, responded, "We are asked to accept the world that God gives us and to accept it with love. If God is everywhere and if God is in everything, then the world as it is all an expression of God and his love. And we have to accept it with gratitude. Because what is the option? What is the option?" Later on in the conversation, Colbert affirms, "The bravest thing you can do is to accept with gratitude the world as it is." Then the conversation takes a heart-aching turn. Cooper asks Colbert, "You told an interviewer that you have learned to love the thing that you wish most hadn't happened." Here Cooper loses his composure and his voice breaks. He struggles on. "Then you went on to say, what punishments of God are not gifts. Do you really believe that?" There's a pregnant pause. And Colbert answers with a knowing smile, tutored by acute grief, "Yes." Then after a pause, he explains why. "It is a gift to exist. It is a gift to exist. And with existence comes suffering. There's no escaping that. I guess I'm either a Catholic or a Buddhist when I say these things. If you are grateful for your life, which I think is a positive thing to do, not everybody is, and I am not all the time, but is the most positive thing to do, then you have to be grateful for all of it. You can't pick and choose what you are grateful for." Colbert then concludes by talking about how his wrenching loss has taught him how to connect with the losses of others, and thereby has taught him to love more truly and more deeply. He then makes a very careful final point. He makes it clear that he is not grateful that his father and brothers died. That's not what he's saying. But he has come to be grateful for the fact that he has suffered and what he has learned from that suffering. In that very precise sense, he has learned to be grateful about the worst thing that has ever happened to him. It's about the, and here he is again. It's about the fullness of your humanity. What's the point of being here and being human if you can't be the most human you can be? And that involves acknowledging and ultimately being grateful for the things I wished didn't happen because they gave me a gift. And then, in what is, for me, an exquisitely faithful Christian moment, Colbert says, "And in my tradition, this is the great gift of the sacrifice of Christ. It's that God does it too. That you are not really alone. That God does it too." Now, friends, I have reservations about Colbert's language about punishment. He is quoting someone else there, Token, I think. Neither Colbert nor I believe that God punished Stephen with the loss of his father and his two closest brother. But Colbert found his way into the deepest possible form of thanksgiving, one that we can find in biblical characters like Job and Father Abraham. He has learned by walking in the way of faith to find gratitude for all of life, for the sheer gift of life, even though it is inevitably shot through with pain and loss. It just is. The world we have is marked by change, decay, loss, accidents, and death. And yet, for all that, it is precious and beautiful, the self-expression and good gift of a loving God. This fragile, broken, painful world is nonetheless God's beloved world, shot through with her holy presence. This world is the lovely gift of a loving God, who, moreover, does not abandon us to the pains of the world, but has entered into that world to bear its pains and sufferings too. And we who claim to follow the one who shared in flesh our fate can do the same for others. We need not be naive or foolish. The call to take joy in life and live in thanksgiving is not an invitation to foolish giddiness. False cheeriness is not the Christian calling. Many in the human family suffer losses so very grave that it is difficult for them to find their way towards saying yes to life and finding gratitude in it. And there are forms of violence and injustice that so mar God's creation and God's creatures that they make saying thank you difficult. And those forms of violence must be stoutly resisted, so that we together can say thank you again. Still, that is when our love, our gratitude, our yes-saying is most needed. When we, through God's grace and through prayerful discipline, learn daily to receive every moment of life as a gift, we open the door to the possibility that others too may find a way to grounded and truthful joy, and so say yes to life despite its pain and despite its losses. Lord, teach us how to be grateful. Teach us how to say yes to life. Teach us again and again to receive this very life as your precious and tender gift. Teach us how to pray constantly, the one prayer that alone is needed. Teach us how to pray, thank you. Amen.